You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 286 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Flashpoint, Batman Night of Vengeance number 1, Batman Killing Time number 2, One Star Squadron number 5, World of Krypton number 5, Batman number 122, The Flash season 8 episode 11, Resurrection, and DMZ season 1 episode 3, The Good Name. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News, Robert Pattinson's returning for the Batman sequel. No surprising there.
No, it would have been shocking if he wasn't coming back.
So, I guess they officially announced it. All right, up next for DC News, Batgirl's reportedly being considered for theatrical release due to HBO Max and Warner Bros. Media changes, which isn't a surprise to me, Cletus, since The Batman made $750 million at the box office before heading to HBO Max and delivering huge numbers there. So it kind of makes sense to me that they try to release it first in theaters and then a month later in HBO Max.
Yeah, Drew, I agree. You know, it makes sense to try and, obviously you're going to make more on the box office than all you're getting from HBO Max is the subscriber money. One thing that is interesting to me, Drew, and I'm only throwing this out as like, it's an interesting thing to think about. I don't know whether this is right or wrong or whatever. I'm curious if Batgirl does come out in theaters like they're thinking about doing, and let's say it's reviewed fine, but it doesn't do super well at the box office, similar to Harley Quinn, for example. Does that hurt the film more in the public perception than if it just came out on HBO Max and came out to pretty good reviews?
It could.
Imagine if Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey came out on HBO Max. And obviously, it did, that wasn't a possibility. I'm not saying that this is what they should have done. But let's imagine a world in which that existed and that's what they did instead of putting it in theaters. Drew, it got pretty good reviews, and I feel like it generally had good word of mouth. I mean, I get not everybody liked it. We certainly did. I think that would have been the story. It's like, hey, this movie on HBO Max is pretty good. Check out Harley Quinn. But it didn't do that well in the box office, and that kind of became the story was, oh, Harley Quinn flopped at the box office, which was a shame because it really, I thought, greatly overshadowed the fact that the movie itself was pretty good. And I'm curious if that happens with Batgirl. Do we end up with a similar situation? I don't know. And that seems to be something I wonder, is that something they even consider? Does it matter at all?
It is something to consider. And this is the reason why. It's public perception. If Batgirl bombs at the box office and people think it's bombing because they think it's bad, not just because people aren't going to see it, because they'd rather just wait till it came on HBO Max. It could be all perspective. People could think, well, I'm not going to watch it because I heard it did bad at the box office. So it's all perspective. It's going to be word of mouth where people who've seen it, if they say, oh, this is really good, you've got to check it out. You know, even if it does bad at the box office, people will check it out if they already have an HBO Max subscription. Well, you know, my buddy such and such told me that it was good, so I'm going to check it out. But if people get this perception that it's bad, they're not going to check it out. So whether it does good at the box office or not, I think it's going to be more a word-of-mouth thing. If people tell other people that it's good, then they'll check it out. If they don't, or they hear it's bad or get this idea it's bad in their head and don't hear, hey, you need to check this out, then it may do bad. So That's my opinion.
Yeah, it's one of the things. Obviously, we have no idea what will happen, until it does come out. And the biggest thing is the movie going to be good or not? Yeah, I mean, hopefully, it's another, rebound movie. Continuing to come back from the rough start that these DC films had. But I think that's sort of the problem, Drew, is I think because DC feels constantly to me like they're in a permanent catch-up mode to Marvel. And whether that's fair or not, I don't know. But it is, I think, a pretty wide perception of their films. And it always feels like they can't really afford to have a bad one come out because they're already in such a public opinion hole. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, these films just don't get the same benefit of the doubt that a mediocre Marvel film would get.
Some of Batgirl is going to hinge on how well The Flash does too. And I can tell you, people that are Michael Keaton fans, of his Batman, they're going to want to see The Flash because he's going to be in it. If they like him in The Flash, they're going to see Batgirl because they're going to want to see him in Batgirl also. So you're going to get probably more audience checking it out just because Michael Keaton's in it.
I think that's fair, Drew, but I wonder how much box office pull that subset of people is, though.
I think there's more fans of Michael Keaton's Batman out there than you think.
Oh, no. I'm not. I do not want to imply that he's not popular. I agree that he is. I do wonder. I don't know, Drew. I wonder how much that moves the box office needle. Maybe it's a lot. And that would be great, but maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just a media, like, was he the reason that Spider-Man was so popular? I don't know. Obviously, it's not exactly the same because he's playing, in this case, an old fan favorite, but I don't know. We'll see. Primarily, obviously, the big thing is if the movie's good, that's going to help a lot, but we'll kind of see. And I agree, putting it in the box office makes sense. But I do think it's worth considering that potential downside. But then again, that is sort of the downside with any blockbuster film. So I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's interesting to think about and kind of see maybe what's going to happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, 'cause who knows? It may not go to the box office. It may just go straight to HBO Max like they were planning. So, it'll be interesting to see. And I'm sure if it goes straight to HBO Max, it's going to get all the views. It's going to get a lot of views for people who have it. I don't know if it'll bring in new subscribers or not, but I guess that's something we'll just have to see. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. Warner Brother announces the return of Michael Shannon as General Zod in The Flash, who first appeared as the villain in 2013's Man of Steel. Now, I gotta tell you, Cletus, I was surprised when I saw that news. I wasn't expecting General Zod to be in the Flash movie. I think it's interesting, though. And I'm curious if we might get possibly a Superman appearance, maybe?
I mean, I hope so. We don't know. I guess the big question is, what is Cavill's standing with DC? He by appearances seems to still be interested in playing Superman. I know you and I and many people are interested in seeing him continue to be Superman, but I'm not sure that Warner Brothers is, and it may be a matter of they just don't want to pay him. And I don't know. But that being said, if you're gonna put Michael Shannon as Zod in there, I mean, you gotta put Cavill in there too, right?
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought when I saw that. I'm like, oh, they're announcing General Zod. Are we gonna have Superman in this movie? That could be interesting. Even if it's only a guest appearance. It would feel weird if he wasn't.
I really wish they would do another Superman film as my biggest takeaway, Drew. I just would love to see Cavill specifically get another chance at a Superman film just to see what he can do under somebody else. I really don't dislike Man of Steel. I know that's a divisive opinion. I don't think it's that bad, and I certainly like him in it. I obviously really like Michael Shannon, and he's great. I just, man, Drew, it would really bum me out if we've seen the last of him as Superman.
Yeah, I like the Man of Steel also. I did not. One of the things I had a problem with was with the neck snap. But I was on way before our podcast. I was on Earth Station 1 when they reviewed it, and that was one of my opinions was I liked the movie, but I didn't like that scene.
Yeah, and
So.
you are certainly not in the minority on that, for sure. I didn't really like it that much either, Drew. Like, I would prefer he not kill Zod. However, I will say that I thought that movie they got a lot of crap for killing Zod, but like in the theatrical version of Superman 2, he also definitely kills Zod. I know in the extended version they make it clear that whatever that, the Fortress of Solitude scene that they get arrested afterwards, but like in the base cut of that movie, he just with a smile on his face, Christopher Reeves just throws them down what appears to be a bottomless cavern. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
And
I
I
know what you
understand,
mean.
and I am not saying that that film should be criticized for that, but it gets a pretty free pass for that. And I felt like Man of Steel was overly criticized for something that it was not the first Superman movie to do something like that.
Well, I can tell
Obviously
you,
much more extreme, but
I
still.
was a kid when Superman 2 came out, and I remember seeing it, and him throwing him in the pit. As a kid, Superman has thrown him into this pit. I didn't think about them being dead. You know what I mean? So
Yeah,
it was
no,
kind of really subtle.
I know they're not the same. Like I mean, you're absolutely right, Drew. One is much more extreme than the other, but I don't know. And it also sort of it made sense within the plot. Now you can argue that they shouldn't have steered the plot in that direction, and I think you'd have a really good point. But given where they put the plot, I mean, the really only option was to kill Zod in that film. So I thought at least from a story perspective, it was justified, if that makes any sense. Like that made it a little bit better rather than it just being a completely unprovoked killing. Like I will to compare that, Drew, to the what seemed to be okay with murder Batman that we got from Zack Snyder, that seemed much less justified than the murder that Superman committed.
Yeah, and I always have a problem with Batman killing, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly Snyder had no issues with any heroes doing that, so
Yeah.
like I said, this is why I'd really love to see somebody else, give Cavill a chance at the Superman character, see what maybe somebody who doesn't want their heroes killing everyone and see what they do.
Yeah, I get that would be interesting. All right, up next for DC News. Harley Quinn Kite Man spin-off Noonans gets a 10-episode series order by HBO Max. So, it's moving forward.
Very exciting. I'm not shocked by this. I feel like for an animated series to be put in the works and then not get picked up, like something really atrocious has to be happening.
That's true. All right, up next for DC News. The CW has officially canceled Batwoman and DC Legends Tomorrow.
Well, I mean, it's certainly a shame that Legends has come to an end, Drew, but I mean, it felt like it was going to get canceled every year. And the fact that it made it to seven, I think, seasons is honestly impressive, especially when you consider that I wouldn't have been surprised if it had been canceled literally at any point during its entire run.
Yeah, you're right, because it always felt like a show that could get canceled.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, it was always at the lower end of the viewership numbers. I mean, it was typically one of, if not the lowest viewed Arrowverse shows. It's definitely the most niche, to say the least. And they still had a pretty good run. And once they finally found their groove and kind of figured out what they were, it was really enjoyable. I mean, that first season is a big disappointment because obviously, they originally intended the series to be something else, and whatever they were aiming at, they just did not succeed and completely missed the mark on. But once they kind of pivoted and were like, well, what if we did this instead? Significant improvement, and
Definitely one of the more enjoyable shows, especially over the long run. I thought it stayed pretty consistent in its quality compared to some other examples.
Yes. No surprise that.
On the sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, no surprise the Batwoman got canceled.
Yeah, I was about to say. I mean, once Ruby Rose left the show, I mean, it always felt like the show was not long for the world. I do think they got a good replacement for her. I really did think the actress was a perfectly good Batwoman, arguably better than Ruby in the first place, playing her own Batwoman. But it just, I don't know. I mean, I never really enjoyed the show. It never, some of it is unfair because, again, they had to literally replace the main character of the show a season in, and that's clearly very difficult to try to maneuver around, and the show understandably didn't really succeed in doing so, I don't think. But I do think it signals, Drew, the fact that this got canceled, even though it had a number of reasons to be canceled, after only 3 seasons, and there's obviously been strong rumors that Flash might be ending. I don't know. I've said it before, Drew. I feel like the end is near for these shows.
I do too, and I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard anything about Naomi yet. I'm wondering if they're waiting to see what the numbers is as it finishes.
This is speculation on my part, Drew, and I could be wrong on this, but I think it is canceled, and I think they don't want to announce it until it's finished airing because they don't want to kill the numbers any more than they already are.
You might be right about that.
Well, because what's the difference between Naomi and Batwoman and Legends? Batwoman and Legends are both done. They're complete. Those shows have completed. Obviously, we haven't finished reviewing those shows on our podcast, but for people watching these shows as they're coming out, those two shows are done. So you can't do anything that would, dissuade an audience from tuning in. Naomi is not done. We know there's at least a handful of episodes left. I think that's it, Drew. I think the show is canceled, and effectively. And they're just trying to run out the clock before they announce anything.
And I know we kind of speculated that before because we saw that they were having a double episode to finish it out too,
Yeah.
coming up in a few weeks, so.
There are so many signs that point towards it not getting renewed. The fact that they haven't announced it, they've announced a number of other renewals. They've already announced some shows that aren't coming back, and they've not said anything about that show. I don't know. And of course, I mean, let's be real, the show's bad. It's not a good show. So I just, and if Flash appears to be ending and all these other DC shows are ending, they don't really have, I don't think, a reason or motivation to keep it going.
Now, I won't be surprised if we hear about the new shows they've been talking about coming, that the Diggle show, whatever, I can't remember what that was called. And then what was the other one, the Gotham Knights one? I wouldn't be surprised if we hear they're stopping production on them or something like that. So, hey.
Well, we know that the Gotham Knights, when they're filming a pilot, but I don't know if we've heard if they're actually picking that series up. So we may, that one might still be a while, Drew, because we might not know until after that pilot's done and whoever is in charge has seen it and been like, oh, let's not. But I agree, the Diggle one's got to be dead. There's no way.
But yeah, it does feel like the Arrowverse is ending. Now, we've been hearing rumors, or I don't know if you've heard any, but I've been hearing rumors that Flash is only going to come back for half a season next year. We have nothing that's confirmed it yet, so we have that. Superman and Lois, I can see that one still going on. It seems to be one of the best out of them right now. So I
It is
just.
definitely one of the best in quality. It's also one of their, I think that or Flash, it's that and Flash are its two most viewed shows. So it's one of their only money makers left, as far as in terms of DC property shows.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time, and we're not going to have any more DC television shows on the CW. Which, I have no problem with that if they want to start moving the rest of them over to any new ones to HBO Max, just because we get a better quality and better writing.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear we're whether we're a year or a couple of years away from the end of an era, Drew. You can just the writing's on the wall. I mean, when Arrow first came out, it was a clear upgrade in terms of like the quality of a superhero show from what we had seen previously. Like Smallville is great for what it was, but like Arrow is clearly an improvement, right? And but then the same thing has happened to the Arrowverse. We've gotten into the era of these premium streaming services that have higher budgets and are frankly just putting out vastly superior shows to what the CW is able to do. And so they've just they have become the dinosaur, and it just feels inevitable. I mean, they were great. I think one of the reasons we're seeing this era of great superhero television is because of what the Arrowverse was able to do, but it's evolved beyond them.
Yeah, it has. All right, and up last for DC News, legendary comic artist Neal Adams dies at 80. How sad to see that. I actually met him a few years ago at Indiana Comic Con and got a signed Batman picture from him, which is funny because the day this news came out, I've had that hanging up in my office for in my office cubicle for the last 2 years, and I've been working from home. I went and picked it up on Friday, so I thought that was kind of weird that that news came out the same day I went and picked it up.
Yeah, I was obviously very sad to hear the news about him. I think it might have also been at Indiana Comic Con. Or maybe it was Boston. It might have been Boston. I got a signed print of his famous one of his famous Green Lantern, Green Arrow covers where Hal and Oliver are kind of grabbing each other by the collars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
very famous cover. He was so nice. Obviously, the extremely brief interaction that I had with him, and he did so much for the comic industry as a whole. I mean, his art style was, very groundbreaking for its time, and he was on so many different landmark series. Obviously, like I mentioned, the Green Lantern, Green Arrow, one of my favorite Silver Age series to read. I know he was big on Batman and kind of that 80s turning of, more becoming a little bit more serious Batman. I mean, his fingerprints are just all over DC and comics in general, and he'll definitely be missed. I mean, what else can you say? I mean, he's one of the legends of DC.
Definitely. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
If you were a monster kid growing up, if you enjoyed Saturday mornings watching Monster Movie Matinee, or staying up all night watching the midnight feature, then Monster Attack is the podcast for you. We not only look at classic old monster movies, we share our experience growing up as a monster kid. Join us every Monday for Monster Attack.
Modern Musicology is a podcast covering topics on rock and pop, ranging mostly from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, with occasional excursions into the 60s and aughts, and even occasionally the 2010s. Anything is fair game. Classic rock, R&B, folk, punk, prog, rap, metal, and way more, with two Americans, one Brit, a ton of fun, and a healthy dose of cynicism.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
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 We've got spoilers, spoilers for you. We've got spoilers,
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 spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Flashpoint. Batman Night of Vengeance number one. Thomas Wayne is getting his casino license renewed. The casino is run by Oswald Cobblepot. Thomas opened the casino so he could bring crime to him to fund its control. Thomas meets with his best friend Jim Gordon and learns that Harvey Dent's kids have been kidnapped by the Joker. Jim also tells Thomas of other people disappearing before the Joker broke out of Arkham. Homeless people, drunks, and drug users. Batman tracks down Killer Croc. Jim Gordon goes to see the Oracle, Selina Kyle, because she has a lead on the Joker. The comic doesn't specifically state it, but I'm guessing the reader is supposed to assume that Selina is in her wheelchair because of the Joker. Batman goes to a local bar looking for answers. Batman finds out the Joker was there with pizza. A new guy had a slice and now is out of his mind. Batman tells Renee Montoya there is nothing that can be done for him, and then Batman breaks his neck. Jim tracks the Joker to Wayne Manor. Jim tries to take on the Joker by himself. When Jim gets sight of the Joker, Jim takes the shot. The Joker falls, and as the Joker falls, the trench coat opens to reveal a little girl strapped standing on a chair with guns tied to her wrist and duct tape over her mouth with a Joker smile. With Jim shocked at what he did, the Joker comes up behind Jim and slits his throat. Batman goes charging into Wayne Manor shouting, "What have you done this time, Martha?" Batman finds the kids still alive. Thomas has a flashback to the night of the mugging where the reader learns that Thomas and Martha survived, but Bruce was the one that was shot. Months later, Martha's therapy isn't working. Thomas says he just wants to see her smile again. Thomas tracks down Joe Chill and beats him to death. When Thomas returns home to Martha, Martha tells him, "See, I'm smiling." Martha's cut a smile into her face, and Thomas has her committed. While trying to rescue the twins, Martha starts beating Thomas with a hammer. They fall out a window of the manor, and Thomas tells Martha he has a chance to change it all. Thomas and Martha die instead of Bruce, and Martha tells him to do it. She asks what becomes of Bruce. Thomas answers he follows in his father's footsteps. Martha asks, "He's a doctor?" Thomas answers no. Martha gets upset and runs away, falling into the hole that would later be Bruce's bat cave, breaking her neck. The end. All right, Cletus, before we even get into the story, I started reading this, and I was like, this seems too dark for Geoff Johns. I flipped back to the beginning, and saw it was written by Brian Azzarella. And as I started reading further into the story, I was like, this isn't new.
Yep.
When I got the comic, it said it was from 2022, but apparently it was just a reprint or something. And it said it was a prelude to, you know, the Flashpoint Beyond story. And I didn't realize it was the classic story. Now, I've never read this story. I've only heard about it from you. So I was kind of intrigued to read it and read the whole story. And I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, one of the reasons for people unfamiliar with the story, it might read a little choppy, is like you said, it's a reprint. And it's a reprint of three different mini stories that appeared in three different issues, which is why there's that kind of weird choppy cut in the between the thirds of the story. But yeah, I mean, it is good. I mean, of course, it has that kind of awkward reference to the main Flashpoint story there in the third bit, which is another giveaway that it was supposed to be just, you know, a small tie-in. But it makes sense to reprint this, especially because this, I feel like they've done so much with the Thomas Wayne Batman since then. I feel like it is good to put this back out there, be like, hey, just in case you've forgotten, or like you, Drew, you've never read it, FYI, here's the Thomas Wayne, you know, in his normal day-to-day, so to speak, as Batman world, and this is who the Joker is in that world, or was, I guess, in that case. And again, knowing that it was meant to be a small tie-in explains why, you know, like, ideally, obviously, Martha wouldn't die that abruptly, right? Like, it kind of feels a little bit quick, but you're like, oh, well, it makes sense because this was just supposed to be a tie-in to a bigger story, and it was supposed to be taking place in the world that wasn't meant to continue, which is silly. Brian should have known better. They always come back, Drew.
Now, did you read the Flashpoint Beyond preview?
Yes. Yeah, I know Johns did his same. He did the Rip Hunter chalkboard thing again, kind of teasing some different things that he will be doing, and I assume other writers will be doing, namely Williamson. An interesting preview. One thing that surprised me the most, Drew, but then it kind of made sense, was that we're getting a continuation of the Doomsday Clock story.
Yeah, that surprised me too. When he was with
really
Mime
interesting.
When he was with Mime and Marionette, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I wasn't expecting it at all. And it doesn't surprise me that he's revisiting that, because I don't think he got his whole story he wanted to tell told.
No, but it really does make sense, because it was so tied. That was so tied to what he was doing with those characters that he's revisiting. So I get it, Drew. It makes a lot of sense. It was not something I expected, but once I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, that, you know, yeah, I understand.
Another thing I thought was interesting was Rip Hunter's chalkboard. It said 5G averted.
That was a little interesting dig, if I'm being honest, Drew. I didn't think that Johns and Didio were on poor terms, but that kind of suggested that they were, don't you think?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Like, okay, so
I'm just saying, of anybody I would have thought was not on bad terms with him, I would have picked Johns, because Johns obviously saw his career blossom, to say the least, under Didio's watch.
So, yeah, I found that very interesting. That was on the chalkboard. So, yeah, very, very interesting preview. I'm excited to read more of this story coming up soon. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Killing Time number 2. April 8th, 1157 BC at 3:57 p.m. The Menads are finally able to pull King Pentheus of Thebes from his perch high in an evergreen. They rip his flesh and pull his bones apart, screaming in delight. Among the Maenads are the king's two beloved aunts, as well as his mother, Queen Agave. 3,000 years later, March 4th, at 11:35 a.m., Selina Kyle and Edward Nigma wait at the Sunway House 40 miles outside of Gotham. Selina is worried about Batman finding them. At the same time, Batman is interrogating Killer Croc, asking him who else knew he was robbing the bank. Also at the same time, Vera Miles, Killer Croc's sometimes fiancé, stops at Mooney's upscale jewelry shop in North Gotham and buys a diamond necklace valued at $14,158. At 1:49 p.m., Edward Nigma returns to the safe house with a fish. Catwoman is angry the buyer hasn't contacted them yet. She is still afraid Batman will find them. April 8th, 1157 BC at 4:11 p.m. The Menads quarrel over the remaining scraps of King Pentheus of Thebes. They howl and they feast. 3,000 years later, March 4th at 2:40 p.m., Vera Miles returns home to find Batman in her apartment. April 8th, 1157 BC at 5:43 p.m., Queen Agave of Thebes grabs a stick from the ground and shoves it into the neck of her severed son's head. She starts her journey down the mountain towards the god waiting below. 3,000 years later, at 4:17 p.m., Batman fights his way through the Iceberg Lounge. By 4:31 p.m., Batman is inside the ICU at Spring General at the foot of Penguin's bed. Just a day earlier, Riddler beats Penguin with his own umbrella, creating a pattern of bruises in Morse code, an address. March 4th, 5:38 p.m., the doorbell rings to the safe house. The buyer is there to meet with Riddler and Catwoman. Roughly 15 minutes earlier at 5:23 p.m., the Batmobile speeds down the Simonson Parkway at 217 miles per hour. Batman will reach the safe house within 15 minutes, roughly. 3,000 years earlier, on April 8, 1157 BC, King Pentheus of Thebes sets out to find the Maenads high in the mountains of Thebes. He has spoken with Dionysus and believes glory awaits him in the forests above. He believes the Antarctic fury of these rabid women must be put down. He is king, and it is his duty to bring order and justice to the world. To be continued.
I think it's going to go really well for him in the forest, Drew.
You think? When I was reading all this stuff from the past, I was like, what does this have to do with what's going on in the story? I wanted to include it because I have a feeling Tom King's going to have a reason why it has to do with the story in the next part of the story. So I wanted to make sure I included it here. But honestly, I was like, what does this have to do with what's going on in the story?
I feel like the implication is fairly strong, Drew, that whatever Selina and Nygma stole is related to whatever is going on with Thebes 3,000 years ago.
You may have a good point there, so I'm interested to see how it ties in. But when I tried to do my recap, I tried to make sure I got all the times and stuff right, and I figured it was all King's including it for some reason. It's important.
Yeah, I really am enjoying this series, Drew. I love, like I mentioned in the first issue, I love that it feels like a detective story. If we're seeing Batman work through his detective work, right? Like slowly piecing the story together. And then you just continue. One of the things that I personally feel like King does really well is this: he does these little things that shows you that he understands the character. Like Nygma, like Selina yelling at Nygma, being like, you didn't leave another clue, you idiot, right? Like, please don't tell me we went through all of this just for you to gumdrop clue, you know, Batman to the answer. And Nygma's like, no, of course not. I'm not stupid. And then there he is, Drew. What did he do? He literally beat Penguin with Morse code. I thought, Drew, at least my thought on this was that I don't know that he did it intentionally either. He might have just, like, he literally can't help himself and just sort of, oops.
That's what it felt like to me, like he couldn't help himself. He had to leave a clue. Yeah, I think this is really good. My gut tells me it's wrapping up next issue. This feels like it's only a 3-issue arc.
That wouldn't surprise me. It does feel structured that way. But also, I mean, I think that would be fine. The pacing feels right so far.
Yeah, it does. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. One Star Squadron number 5. Heroes for You, Downtown Metropolis, the next morning. The police and the fire department are investigating the burning of the building. Power Girl shows up to collect her things. It does not take long for the fire department to rule the burning an arson. Red Tornado and Power Girl are brought into the police department for questioning. Power Girl is their number one suspect. Red Tornado holds a staff meeting at a local diner called Beefer Bonkers. Power Girl shows up to let everyone know that she is not behind the arson. She didn't do it. Red Tornado walks her out with an arm around her shoulder, telling her he believes her. Power Girl sits in front of the Metropolis Welcomes You sign, wondering if she knows what's right and wrong anymore. Power Girl sees two people trapped on the 14th floor of a burning building. She goes and saves them. Before Red Tornado comes home, he stops at the crime scene. Terry shows up. Red Tornado tells Terry that the board is not going to rebuild, or they are just going to pocket the money. Terry reveals to Red Tornado that he burnt the building down. Terry explains that the job Red Tornado sent him on, the company was a front for Lex Luthor. Lex used the Seashell Company to buy Heroes for You. Lex wanted to make Terry manager, his man on the inside. He wanted Terry to give him access to records and information on other heroes. Terry originally agreed, but didn't want to go through with it. Not knowing what else to do, Terry burned down the place. Red Tornado reveals that the police just told him they found Gangbuster's body among the remains. Apparently, he had one of his episodes last night and fled. Not having anywhere else to go, he returned to the Heroes for You building. Why he didn't come out or try to save himself, no one can say. Red Tornado knows that once the police find out that Terry was behind the arson, they will charge him with manslaughter. Red Tornado gives Terry $50,000 from the safe and tells him to disappear and start a new life. To be continued.
Well, Drew, I don't think either of us was shocked to see that this was a downer of an issue.
Yeah, I wasn't shocked.
It's one of the things that I love about Russell's writing is his incredible sense of humor, but the way he mixes it with some really, frankly, dark storytelling. I think one of the things I appreciate about his humor is that it feels a little necessary sometimes to blunt the kind of either, you know, the sadness, I don't know what the right word I'm looking for is, but just in the downers that his comics can be sometimes. The laughs that he gives you beforehand kind of help soften the blow.
Yeah, this was definitely a downer. And now Red Tornado, not only is Terry in trouble, Red Tornado's an accessory for helping him escape.
Yeah.
So things aren't looking good for them. And this, what issue is this? This was issue number 5. So I'm pretty sure it wraps next issue.
And I'm sure we will get some bittersweet stuff in there, Drew. I'm sure we'll get, you know, some more unpleasant stuff. But even within this issue, there was a small scene, but it was one I enjoyed, where it seemed like Power Girl was kind of remembering what it was like to actually be a hero and not just work in an office, where we see she saves those people. And you know what I mean? It was like that nice little moment of like that smile on her face as she's flying away. It's just one of those things. Obviously, credit to the artist for drawing that, but you know, again, that goes into Russell's storytelling. It's just, I know, I'm very much looking forward to the conclusion of this, Drew, because I'm sure it's not going to be completely happy, but at the same time, I don't think it's going to be a totally dour story either.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, World of Krypton number 5. Drusod has his men engage the protesters with prejudice. Jor-El tells Laura it's too late for Krypton. Krypton's core has decayed past the critical baseline. Now they must face the end with dignity. Kara tells her father that she scored highest achievement on her history presentation. Mother wants to celebrate. Her father ignores her, trying to figure out if the Phantom Zone has a survival zone. Zod requests an emergency meeting with the Judicial Council. Zod wants broader authorities to enforce the policies. Jor-El tells Zod the end is near and he's come to stop him for Krypton. Laura tells her little one it's time to get to work as she starts searching the universe for a new solution.
I mean, once again, Drew, the same standing thing of it's not really doing anything new. The only thing potentially is interesting is that they're doing for whatever reason, an actual physical showdown in a Superman suit between Jor-El and Zod, in my opinion, is pretty dumb. The first time that they've done something that's a little bit different, I'm like, oh, but what if you didn't do that?
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was like, okay, we're really doing this, huh? And normally, Jor-El is the one that searches for the planet, so that was also a little different, too, seeing Laura searching for a planet to send little Kal-El.
Yeah.
So, it's deviating a little bit. But it's not deviating like the Batman origin story we're reading, where it's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it's just hitting the big points, right? It's making sure it hits all of the hallmarks without any of the nuance that would be like the interesting and different things. Like in the Batman story reading, obviously it is doing Batman's, you know, learning to become Batman in a different way. It is still hitting some of the benchmarks. Like he's with Ducard now, right? Which as he's supposed to be, but Zdarsky is getting into the nitty-gritty, right? He's getting into the smaller stuff, the smaller scenes that are new and interesting. And I feel like this series that we're reading with Krypton is more pulled back a little bit. Like, obviously, we still have some personal scenes between characters, but for the most part, kind of two steps back. Like, we're a little bit more big picture. And unfortunately, I think that's for the worse. I think it would be better if it got a little more personal with its story. The other thing I wanted to mention, Drew, is for the most part, I've enjoyed the kind of stylized art. It's not my favorite, but it's been fine. This issue, though, I didn't quite like it as much. Especially, I really did not like the way they drew Kara in the one scene where she pops up with her dad was not good. However, they chose to draw her character was terrible, was noticeably bad.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And I didn't go back and look, but I was wondering if it was the same artist, because I thought the same thing. I thought the art was worse in this issue. You're looking right now, aren't you?
No, actually, I wasn't. I don't care enough.
Yeah, I guess that's why I didn't go back and look. I didn't care enough either.
I mean, for the most part, even if it was a different artist, it fit for the most part with the same visual style. It just didn't seem quite as good. But the only real, like, I wouldn't have even brought it up, Drew. It was not that big of a difference, except for that scene with Supergirl was really, like, however they chose to draw her was not good.
Yeah, and I noticed that too. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Batman number 122, Washington, D.C. Batman and Detective Chase investigate how Deathstroke was able to get past their security. Somehow he dug a tunnel. Deathstroke Geek is under attack from the Demon Shadow. A woman named Angel Breaker seems to be leading the attack. Angel Breaker reveals that they have been commanded to kill Deathstroke and all of his associates. Angel Breaker orders Detonator to take out the building. Deathstroke and Respawn escape and decide to go into hiding. Damian finds Ravager and asks Rose for her help to find her father. Rose agrees and she will help Robin kill her father. Batman travels to Nepal, the Demon's Palace. After taking out Talia's ninjas, Batman accuses Talia of hiring Deathstroke to kill her father. Batman sees Talia is hurt and things turn romantic. To be continued in Deathstroke Inc. number 8. All I gotta say, Cletus, is ugh.
Well said. Well said. It's interesting to me, Drew, because sometimes I do wonder myself, like, how bad can it be if Williamson is on Batman for like 6 to 7 issues, right? Like, it can't be that bad. How much damage could he do? The answer? Quite a bit, as it turns out.
The romantic relationship between Batman and Talia, it was very forced here, and didn't even make sense.
No,
they haven't been an item for. They haven't been an item for like a long time. It didn't make sense, and.
Drew, they didn't even become a couple again when they introduced Damian as his long lost son. They didn't even go back to it then. And now all of a sudden you've got Williamson and his eternal genius.
I didn't like that at all. I thought it was forced. I didn't care for the story at all, actually. What was up with the artwork? The artwork didn't look very good in this either.
It's one of the same artists that Williamson has been using on his stuff, though. It's not necessarily my favorite art, Drew. I won't disagree there, but it didn't surprise me because we've definitely been seeing this guy on his books.
Well, the thing I thought was sad was I thought the artwork in the backup story was better than in the main title.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
All right, well, anything else you want to say about the main story before we move on?
No, it's one of those things. Again, I don't think it's atrocious. So I don't want to make it sound like it's the worst comic I've ever read or a story idea in general, this Deathstroke thing. It's not. I mean, it's just I'm not a Williamson fan, so, it, you know, a mediocre story from him is just not going to be for me.
And I just didn't care for this story. All right, we had a backup story called Secret Meetings. Commissioner Gordon tells Batman that someone put a hit out on Robin. Batman says he has been taking care of it. Deathstroke has a shot on Robin, but Batman stops him. Batman demands to know who hired Deathstroke to kill Robin. Deathstroke doesn't know. He was just paid the money in advance. Deathstroke states he is not leaving Gotham until Robin is dead. Batman repeats his question more angrily this time. Deathstroke reveals it was a phone call, a creepy voice, and he wouldn't stop laughing.
Drew, I will agree that the art was better in this story, but that's about the only praise I have for it. Again, it's the same thing. It is not bad, but I don't like the idea of this story. The idea of Joker hiring Deathstroke to kill Robin is one of those, like, fan fiction stories to me, Drew. And I know you can argue that in some sense that's what comics are, but, like, I don't know, man. It's just really, that kind of story is just not for me. It's one of those things that just, if it sounds like something, more like something that somebody on the internet would come up with than a professional comic book writer, it's not going to be for me.
Well, you know who wrote this backup story, don't you? It was Williamson.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. I assumed it was Williamson.
So, no surprise there, huh?
No, well, but I mean, that's kind of his style, Drew, and I understand. I mean, it makes sense. Most comic writers, especially now, are going to be fans growing up. I get it. I feel like a lot of his stuff just feels a lot, personally, a lot more like fan fiction than it does like legitimate big comic publishing stories. And people are free to disagree with me on that point, and they would be completely valid in doing so, but that's just my take.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic book talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Hey, Dad, what's the Soul Forge podcast?
The Soul Forge podcast is all about life, the universe, and everything.
Is it good for kids?
Oh, no, it's not good for kids.
Is it geeky?
Oh, it can be geeky, but it can also be serious. We talk about life, sex, dating, and mental health, and so much more.
Where can you find a Soul Forge podcast?
You can find it everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and the ESO Network.
It was the dawn of another podcast. The Epsilon 3 is a dream given form. It's a home away from home for three guys to watch a 90s sci-fi classic TV show. Three guys with microphones over 3,249 miles apart, all alone in the night. The year is 2021. The name of the station is Babylon 5. The name of the podcast is the Epsilon 3. Veer, bring me a drink.
And we're back. Let's talk The Flash, Season 8, Episode 11, Resurrection. 2012. Ronnie has a burn on his arm that Caitlin patches up. Ronnie is working on the pipeline at Star Labs. It's their first meeting. In the present, Blackfire is telling Caitlin to help them come together. Not whole without you. You save us. Memories in the snow. Coast City. Iris has another episode. Sue tries to call Barry, but her phone disappears. Joe and Cecile uncover more victims of Blackfire when going through Kramer's files, going back 6 months. Colin Smith, Megan Landa, and Veronica Bining. When Caitlin returns to Star Labs, Caitlin recognizes all the victims. The Blackfire has been looking for her. Caitlin reveals that the Blackfire is Ronnie Raymond, and he wants Caitlin to save him. Team Flash comes up with a crazy plan to resurrect Ronnie. Chester is live streaming about the device he is working on, and Allegra has a discussion with him about posting it on the internet for everyone. Death should not be some kind of science experiment. It's a part of life, and it's finite. Allegra says it's what her abuelita used to call the blackest night. Cecile has an encounter with the Blackfire, asking where Caitlin is, demanding to be set free. It was a telepathic connection. Cecile tells Barry she doesn't think that Ronnie wants to be brought back. Cecile thinks he wants to die. Cecile tells Caitlin that, from what she can tell, Ronnie is in agony inside that fire. It's like it's eating him alive. It's torturing his mind. It's like he's in hell. Caitlin won't listen. She intends to save Ronnie by herself if she has to. Barry tells Team Flash they are going to use the sphere to stop the Blackfire once and for all and release Ronnie like he wants. Coast City, Iris wakes up. Sue states she is taking Iris back to Star Labs. Tinya is angry about what happened to her mother. Tinya touches Iris and makes her disappear. Frost brings Caitlin the Atom Splicer and helps her try to bring Ronnie Raymond back. Caitlin realizes what Ronnie meant by memories in the snow. The Blackfire attacks some campers telling ghost stories around a fire at Piedmont State Park. Flash takes the sphere there to stop Blackfire. Frost and Caitlin show up and free Ronnie from the sphere. Caitlin puts that quantum splicer on Blackfire and it turns back into Ronnie. Sue tells Barry that Iris is gone. Caitlin goes to check on Ronnie and Caitlin discovers that Ronnie Raymond is dead and she helped create Deathstorm.
Told you so.
Yes, you did. That's what I thought when as soon as we got to that scene. I was like, yep, Cletus was right.
That's what it, come on, you didn't know it as soon as they had the Blackest Night line?
Oh yeah, I knew it back then. Okay, Cletus, I gotta tell you, I pulled out my Green Lantern rings and I put on my black ring while I was watching this episode.
I have to give the show a lot of credit for, I mean, it looks exactly like Deathstorm from Blackest Night. I mean, they nailed the look.
I have to agree with you.
I'm unsure, Drew, that the CGI will look good once he starts moving around, but when he was just standing still, it was awesome.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was like, man, he looks just like the comic book version. So I thought that myself. And yes, the Blackest Night, I like how they kind of threw that in there without, you know, actually being the Blackest Night story. You know what I mean? It's kind of cool, I mean, they referenced it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we talked about, I mean, there was a reason I speculated this last time, Drew. I mean, there were a lot of signs pointing towards it potentially being Deathstorm, but one of the biggest ones was the whole feeding off of emotion thing is a pretty good adaptation of the idea of the Black Lanterns. So that's cool. I mean, the Black Fire story as a whole has been kind of weird to me so far, but the Deathstorm look was so good, Drew. It really made up a lot for the episode. I thought it was another fine, mediocre Flash episode, but the reveal at the end was so cool looking. I was like, you know, I kind of don't care.
It was cool. But I like this episode a little more because of that too. But I'm getting really tired of the back and forth fighting. Should we do this? Should we not do this? It's so dramatic. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you, Drew. I totally, totally agree. And it's exhausting. And it's every episode. And it's basically almost every CW show, too, where it's just like it's a bunch of standing around talking about what they should do and then a little bit of action. But then a lot of times the action is all kind of a little bit dumb, if I'm being honest, Drew. I don't know. I mean, even the scene where she brings back Ronnie, like Ronnie kind of coming alive was cool, but it didn't really make, like they said, oh, two people are coming in really fast. How, Drew? Killer Frost doesn't have super speed. How are they moving fast?
Yeah, I was wondering that myself too. I'm like, wait a minute, how could they get there so fast? I honestly thought that Caitlin and Frost were already going to be there when Flash got there because, you know, it was going to take them a lot longer to get there than, you know, Flash is not going to take very long. I expected them to be there. I didn't expect the Flash to get there first and then them show up. Like, how can you catch up to the Flash that fast? It doesn't make sense.
They didn't really have an answer for it. They sort of just let it, you know, be. They threw that line out there and were like, we don't need to explain that. They just showed up. Accept it.
Yeah.
I also wasn't thrilled, Drew, that they had been, as you mentioned, so freaking conflicted about whether to do this or not. And then they do bring Ronnie back, even though they had had the Blackfyre trapped. And nobody held any reservations at that point. It seemed like everybody immediately 180 flipped to being on board. And I was like, really? Nobody? You don't want to show at least one character still holding reservations that this was a bad idea?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I don't know. It's just the drama of it drives me nuts.
I'm going to be honest. I really do not like the split focus between the two storylines, Drew. I don't think it's well served. I don't know how it ends in a way that makes sense.
I got to tell you, Cletus, I think it was last week or the week before, I said I thought maybe the story's tied together. What was going on with Iris was creating this. I don't think so now. I think they're just doing two totally different stories.
And I agree, Drew, but I also think that they are going to try to tie them together somehow, and I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, after seeing this episode, I have to agree with you. And, of course, they're to the point now that they don't really care if stuff works. I mean, we see that with Naomi and Bat. We saw that in Batwoman. There's the point that when these CW shows, they don't care if stuff works. They just do it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't think they're...
As we mentioned in the first segment, they're getting outdated for a reason.
Yes, sir. All right. Anything else you want to say about this episode?
No. I want to make sure, because I am so critical of The Flash in the last couple of years, I do want to make sure I credit them. They absolutely nailed the look of Deathstorm, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. Does this show still have a lot of the issues it's had? Yes. But, again, credit where it's due. Nailed the look.
Yep, I have to agree. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. DMZ Season 1, Episode 3, The Good Name. Alma is making house calls and helping people wherever she can. While Alma is at the clinic, Wilson sends someone to get her. It was Susie, not Wilson, who wants to speak with Alma. Susie wants to know why Alma is making allies for Wilson. Alma states they have a shared interest in stopping Parco. All Alma wants is to get her son back. After that, Alma plans to leave. This isn't her war. Wilson takes Alma to the basement to make sure she knows who he really is. Wilson shoots one of the men he threatened last episode for stealing his gold. Alma pulls the bullet out of him and then gives him a choice. He can either give her the name and she'll stitch him up, or he can bleed out and die. The man tells Alma it was Skell. Tenny reveals to Christian that Wilson worked for her father. Her father took Wilson in when Tenny was little. Tenny's father died in the early days of the war when she was 14. Wilson took to protecting her like she was his own, like her dad would have wanted. Wilson tells people that Tenny is his niece, his princess. She lives in his gilded prison as Wilson's ward. Christian asks her if she would leave the DMZ with him. She says yes. Alma tries to find Parco to find Skell. Instead, Alma finds out Parco is getting guns from the U.S. soldiers. Parco offers a brick of gold for anyone who can give him the location on Alma. Alma finds Christian stealing Wilson's gold at the diner. Alma tells him it's a setup by Wilson. Alma also tells him that Parco is lying to him and is getting weapons from U.S. soldiers. Christian doesn't want to listen to Alma and then gets caught by Wilson. When Parco finds out that Wilson has Skell, Parco is ready to go to war. Alma is caught in the fighting when the battle between Parco and Wilson breaks out. Skell is freed. Parco goes after Wilson, and they end up in hand-to-hand combat. Parco beats Wilson. Alma shows up, and Parco tells her that he's won. When Skell shows up, Parco tells Skell to prove his loyalty. Skell picks up Wilson, says, "All hail the king," and then throws Wilson out a window to his death. Skell stares at Tenny and his mother. Skell leaves with Parco.
I don't want to get into every single issue I had with this episode, Drew, because ultimately a lot of it comes back to the same fundamental problem, in my opinion, which is that the show, I think is, ironically, Drew, I know a lot of shows suffer from being too long. I think it's too short. Four episodes just doesn't seem like enough to cover the story that they want to be telling. And so they're jamming everything into this impossibly small window. Like they mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Drew, it's only been like 5 days have passed, and yet these monumental swings of status quo have happened in an area that's existed for like, what, 7 or 8 years. It's a problem, and it creates a lot of problems in the show.
One of the things I want to point out real quick before you move on to your next point, it made it seem like Alma was doing all these house calls for a long period of time, but then they were like, well, you've only been here 4 days.
Yeah. And that's sort of the problem, Drew, is that the show is sort of trying to have it both ways, where it's only been 4 days, which is absurd. But then all of these things that have happened in a 4 day span that are frankly absurd to have happened in a 4 day span. It's just, and then going into my second point, and these are really tied together, is it suffers greatly from the same problem that Naomi suffers, which is it, all of the plot just has to focus and center around the main character so much, and everybody bends over backwards for stuff to make sense for the character to be involved in. And it just has such, it opens up those two points, Drew, the ridiculously condensed timeline and the fact that the main characters are involved in impossible ways in all of the scenarios, create just all of these plot holes that just don't, and moments in the show that just do not make sense. Frustrating to watch. I was getting angry watching the show because I almost felt insulted at how dumb some of the stuff the show was trying to make me believe.
Let me bring up a point you brought up last, no, I think it was in the first episode. The U.S. soldiers not crossing that line. And here we have them inside the DMZ giving weapons to Parco.
Yeah. I agree. And again, I want to emphasize this one. Like you said, I don't want to get into specific scenes just because they all ultimately go back to the characters have unbelievable plot armor. They are involved in unbelievable ways, and this is all happening far too quickly. But one of the main points that they keep, in my opinion, inexplicably coming back to is the fact that they want to preserve the world of this DMZ area because, God forbid, either side get a hold of it. They've made it pretty explicit, Drew, that that would be bad for the DMZ. But that doesn't make sense because at the same time, they are also showing that it is a complete hellscape to be living in. One of the main characters of the show is a child living with the corpse of his dead grandfather. You know what I mean, Drew? I don't understand what the show, like, the show seems to want it both ways, where like the DMZ is this special place and people finally get to be who they want to be and blah, blah, blah. But then also it's the worst possible place you could live, which makes a lot of sense. That's what I would expect, but then also preserve it. I don't get it.
You're not the only one. And that's basically all I have to add to that. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so I definitely wanted to shout out some Neil Adams comics. My go-to is always going to be Green Lantern, Green Arrow, because personally that's my favorite thing that he did. But I know I've already shouted out about that before multiple times. So I wanted to pick something else. And I thought another series that I first read in college when I was taking some comic book classes. And I was introduced to his Dead Man Run back in the late 60s. And he first got put on the book in Strange Adventures number 206, which is Dead Man's second appearance. So he first appeared in Strange Adventures 205, drawn by Carmine Infantino, who then becomes one of the writers in the second issue, and that's where Neil Adams
pops on. And then in the following issue, number 207, is Neil Adams's first Dead Man cover art. A pretty famous one. You got a bunch of characters' faces in the background with Dead Man kind of front and center in the comic. Definitely one of the things that really helped him break through at DC and kind of established himself as somebody that people were following. It's good stuff. And it's interesting because you get the first issues of, you know, a fan favorite, I would say, like D-list character that people like. But it's also the thing that helped one of DC's most famous artists break through in at the same time. So pretty cool.
That is cool. All right. And for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Loki because I finally watched it. I was told, Dad, you need to watch Loki before you see new Doctor Strange movie. So I checked out Loki. It was pretty good. I'm not sure how it's going to tie into what's going on with Doctor Strange, maybe loosely, but I really enjoyed the series, and I didn't know they were going to have a season two, so I was surprised to see, because I hadn't heard anything about a season two. So I'm looking forward to when the new season comes out.
It's a great show, Drew. I actually didn't realize you still hadn't seen it. That's funny. I loved it.
It was one of those I had put it off for some reason, and I finally watched it. And when I started watching it, I'm like, man, this is really good. Why haven't I watched this yet? So yeah, I found it very interesting, and I know it has a lot to do with a multiverse, but I don't know if it's actually going to tie into the new Doctor Strange movie, honestly. But I did enjoy it.
We'll find out soon. We'll find out this weekend.
Yep. So that's one reason why I got it watched. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman Catwoman, we got Batman 89, Flashpoint Beyond, Naomi Season 2, a Batman Urban Legends, Batgirls, I Am Batman, Green Lantern, Superman Son of Kal-El, Wonder Woman, and of course our DC television shows, The Flash, and the season finale, maybe even the series finale of DMZ. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network. Your station for all things geek.